Welcome to The Sound of Economics. My name is Guntram Wolf, and in today's Director's Cut, I talk with Anna Palacio and Elena Rybakova about the migration challenge that Europe is facing. The European Council has probably spent some 50% of its time in the last few years discussing how to respond to the European migration challenge. And in June of this year, there has been a major summit conclusion, which tries to implement a policy which would send refugees arriving in the Mediterranean ideally back to disembarkation centers in the north of Africa. And I think the former minister Ana Palacio has written on the issue, and I would like to ask her to perhaps give us a first assessment of this European Council's conclusion, as well as her view of how the migration challenge, but perhaps also opportunity, should be tackled in Europe.
Well, first of all, Guntram and Bruegel, thank you for having me. Now, one comment. You speak about the migration challenge, but then you speak about refugees. Well, these are two different concepts. And the first thing that we Europeans, we have to come to terms with is that with refugees, we have duties, responsibilities in agreement with treaties. We have legally binding obligations and responsibilities according to treaties and to our own constitutions. What we don't have is a migration policy, immigration policy. We don't. And we don't for historical reasons. Europe has to come to terms with the idea that we are an immigration. We may say that we are aging population, but the people are not there. There is not such a widespread concern. So this is this sociological, legal, I think the contradictions in which we call them refugees, but in fact, an important part, the big challenge is in immigrants, in economic immigrants, and we don't have a policy there, and we are not bound by legal treaties. We should establish an immigration policy based on European interest, on the fact that we are aging, that we need certain and be very clear and very forward-looking on all this. So this is my first comment. Now, we oscillate today between the idea, oh, there is an exaggeration, there is not such a migration challenge. There was in 2015, and this was a refugee crisis of people coming from Afghanistan and from Syria mostly. But today, figures are going down. Well, the issue here is the differences in GDP per capita and the differences in demographics, the demographics pressure in particular in Africa and our proximity. The third element is the other idea, oh, we have to have a Marshall Plan for Africa, which again, we have to address. There are exceptions in Africa. When you dump all Africa together, you put together countries that have nothing to do. But we would say that in general terms, there is a lack of institutional backbone to enact a plan similar to the Marshall Plan. Now I go to your very specific question about disembarkation platforms. I think that there too, Europe has to come to terms with its own contradictions. This could be a shake-up in this situation. But we have to take responsibility. What we cannot do is to just underwrite the responsibility for southern border, Mediterranean, many times not even governments, and the case in Libya is very clear. We have to take responsibility. We have to address, and as I say, we have to discuss. This was discussed, this disembarkation platform, there was no agreement. Now, The last comment that I will make is that the problem is that it will be very difficult to reach an agreement because right now the political positions of different member states are in opposite sides. So if there is no political will, we will never find a true solution. We will never find a European-wide policy on immigration. And there is where I think that we have to take Schengen as an example. But of course, we have the problem of open borders and security, which will play into there. My conclusion is that we have to be more realistic, to face the challenge we have, but to face it, not to try to find quick fixes as underwriting the responsibility to others or to try to convince the European citizens that there is not a challenge there, that this is exaggerated, because true or not, and the perception, when you see the figures of perceptions and reality, they are very different, but true or not, perception is today as important as reality is, or even more important.
But can I push you a little bit more on sort of the main point that you're making, that of course we have primarily, we are an immigration continent, and the refugees are only a very small part of those immigrants. I mean, I think in terms of numbers, it's really just a fraction. Yet on the migration front, so the overall immigration that we get, we don't have a clear European policy, right? I mean, we have some national policies, but they are all different. Everybody does a little bit what he wants or she wants. So is the European Council actually discussing the wrong issue by focusing just on sort of the boat people because they are so much in the perception? Or,
you know, the problem is that you don't have a critical mass of political will in the European Council to reach an agreement at 27. You don't. And therefore, what you have here, as you have in many other aspects, is that there are moves, there are signals, I'm not blaming anyone because this is a situation. It's very hard to navigate. We need, you need something that does not exist and that, frankly, in the foreseeable future is not going to be easy to find, which is that there are certain governments that just have a policy of just closed borders, which is unrealistic, while other governments, they really don't have a policy. The governments, the progressive, the open versus the closed, the progressive versus the nationalist. The problem is that there is not a full-fledged immigration policy that we need, that will entail. We are seeing today what's going on in Denmark in this forced assimilation. We need to discuss, the aspects of incorporation, and I'm using a very neutral word, incorporation of these new immigrants that, by the way, many of them are as Spanish as I am or as German as I think you are. So, we need to come to terms with this fact that there are in certain of our member states that we have 10%, others where we have 5%, others that we have 12%, and others that we don't have had an experience of immigration. And unless we address this and we address it honestly, and if it cannot be done at the level of the European Council, you take the example of Schengen. You have a group of countries. You do it, and then we will see. Yeah, and I'm not speaking about cooperation renforcée, reinforced cooperations, not in the treaty, because in the treaty you have, what is happening in PESCO is a good example of the limits of the treaty, even in these articles. And you know, I pleaded guilty. I'm a mother of the ill-fated constitution. I was a member of the presidium, but this.
So we need some form of club for.
I think so. Yeah,
with
absolutely.
With a different constitution.
Of a different basis. International public law. Schengen at the beginning was an international public law treaty, but a very well done treaty. Because if we try to use the instruments of the European Council, and of course with a great coordination. There I have written on the importance of the person that will hold the position of President of the European council, because there will be a lot of mediation, a lot of hinge to be done. And in my opinion, we have the example of Herman Van Rompuy that was, I mean, was the author, no medals claim, no nothing, but he was the author behind the curtains of the reforms that were undertaken in the euro crisis of in 2011 and 10.
Okay, thank you very much for this sharing these ideas with us. I'm now turning to Elina Rybakova, who is a fellow here at Bruegel and has been working on the integration of immigrants into our societies. And Elina, you've just listened to our conversation. So what would you like to add?
Well, I'd like to pick up on the perception versus reality and also integration versus assimilation. I think this is fantastic points, and it's also encouraging to hear it from the researchers and also former politicians, because there are two issues. One, we often talk about assimilation, and that meets the most resistance from the incoming migrants or refugees. I think integrating and being realistic about what you can do, and also not putting an unnecessary feeling of guilt that if you're not assimilating, it means somehow you're not good enough. And I think when the authorities, the governments talk about assimilation, they also emphasize the negative sentiment towards those that are coming and encourage the negative sentiment. So I think that is very important. Integration, not assimilation. And oftentimes it works through the grassroots policies. Even in the UK, where many voted for Brexit partially on the basis of migration, if you look at the most in the regions most exposed to migrants, actually those are voted to stay, because at the grassroots level, especially in the cities, it actually works day to day at the hairdressers, at the bank, you find a way of interacting together.
So integration is a two-way road?
Integration is definitely a two-way road, and here we come to the perception versus reality. And I think oftentimes part of the government establishment, what Anna also referred to as the more liberal parts of the government, they shy away from difficult topics. And I think that is important to have the I hear your concerns conversation, and all concerns are legitimate, even though they might appear as racist or sexist or inappropriate. But it's much better to address them and have an open discussion about them rather than sort of put them under the carpet and call these people labels or names as not following sort of the more progressive way of thinking. So there are legitimate concerns of any recipient population of migrants or refugees, and I think there has to be a discussion. And there are wonderful studies on media, for example, the comparison of media coverage of refugees in Greece versus UK. And in Greece, it was all about helping, because there is a lot of day-to-day interaction. And in the UK, it was all about the sort of hordes of people coming towards you from the horizon. And oftentimes in the report and media video reports on the refugees, you would have a reporter or an expert speaking, and those will be sort of mute hordes of migrants coming, and there would never be a question addressed to one of those persons. So I think that drives a lot the perception, and as the government, we have to be actually also helping shape that debate, not shy away from it.
But can I ask you a bit further on this? I mean, you say recipient communities have legitimate concerns. I mean, I think by now it's going beyond just having legitimate concerns. I mean, we do have cities, we do have regions in Europe where recipient communities even move to the use of violence because they feel this is just too much people that look different, that behave different from what we are used to. I mean, the most recent example in Chemnitz, where basically social media allowed some groups to mobilize within literally hours, hundreds and hundreds of people that were running after everybody who looks a little bit foreign, right? So this has become actually quite a serious issue, and frankly speaking, a very worrying tendency in some of our societies. And that you can see that the political system is extremely nervous about it. And I interpret the European Council discussions on the topic very much as being reactive, trying to sort of address the issue of especially of boat people because of the fear of, you know, such, I would say, almost riots or gangs or racist groups in different cities. So what's the, is that the right approach? What's the best approach at this stage for this issue?
Well, I think it's great that you brought up that episode specifically. It's an example of how using media or Facebook could bring out more numbers of people and also a perception that there was a sort of a grassroots swell of anti-migrant sentiment. Well, in reality, actually, there were not as many people as might appear. And also the mechanism of mobilization was social media. I think sort of similar discussions, again, through the social media, through the pod presentations that we have, for example, now, is extremely important. And then in terms of the sentiment, if you look at the studies, for example, of the UK's anti-migrant sentiment, it swells up during the during the elections, because some of the parties sort of bring that out. And actually, once the election cycle subsides, it's actually very calm. And on average, according to the statistical studies, UK is very receptive towards migrants. You would never believe that now in the current environment. So I think being part of that discussion from the government side and discussing indeed, look, I have a concern that if I go to NHS, will my queues be longer or shorter? That is okay to be worried about that. You shouldn't be dismissing some of this concern off the bat. And I think this sort of the most violent anti-migrant sentiment, and we've actually had an example from one of the sort of the grassroots projects where the first steps were to have a soccer game or cleaning up the field in the backyards to play soccer together. And it started from the point where there was a migrant reception center on one side. On another side, we actually saw somebody walking around with a gun. And when we asked that person why, he said, well, I want to defend my family from these migrants. I think after this sort of the soccer project, it's got a little bit easier. So I think the simple sort of community-driven projects or giving tools to communities to deal with this, I think, is very important. But it comes from the national level.
Right, so communities need support. Some of the support is coming from the European Union, of course, by now. I mean, the European Union has implemented some financial support schemes allowing communities, NGOs, and so on to draw on European resources to, you know, basically help build reception camps, but also, of course, help fund integration courses and so on. But of course, most of the funding is still coming from the national level, and so ultimately, it is still a national responsibility. But it raises also, I guess, some tensions between member states. It's not just sort of a perception issue. How many people you get and how much you think that is a burden or a benefit to your society, but mostly people think in terms of burden, but also what's the financial implications for it?
Well, my comment on that is Europe wasn't built in a day, and that's okay that some of these initiatives at the first and second and third go won't succeed. For example, in some countries that received this financial support and had the projects, some of the migrants left, because they felt that they still are afraid of staying in that country and that at the current level, it's difficult for them to stay and they would like to move on. So I think you just have to accept that in the beginning, it will not go as smoothly as you would like to.
Okay, thank you very much, Elina Rybakova from Bruegel, for sharing your thoughts with us today. It was a pleasure to host this director's cut on the immigration challenge that the European Union is facing.